outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Chain. The God Chain. The God Chain.
I told you I'd be back. I know some of you got nervous because, I made some weird comments, but I told you I'd be back. We missed a couple of Fridays, a Tuesday, because I was off on vacation in the High Sierras with my family. I got some work done up there as well as some R&R time just to rest and refresh. There is no place in the world that renews my soul quite like the High Sierras of Central California. It's where my family grew up vacationing. It's where Sarah and I get to go to visit my dad still, who lives up there. And it's a beautiful place in the woods, a big alpine lake, a chance to water ski, water tube, fellowship, have fun. We had 11 days with our grandkids up there, seven of those with mommy, and then a few of those without mommy because mommy had to come home with an emergency. But so we had the kids a bit, had some wonderful growth in their water aquatics and being able to do some things they've never done before. That was fun. Played lots of games. Sarah and I take long walks in the woods with the dogs, and that's always a treat. And it's a renewing time. It was a lot of fun. Came back, and we got home on Monday. So now we're back at it. It's hot out here in California. There are some fires raging, but at this point, at least none of them are near us. So I get a lot of email, hey, Wayne, are you guys okay in the fire? We are okay. The fires are not near us, but that doesn't mean it's okay because there's other people that are really facing the challenge of those fires, and my heart hurts for them too. Hi, I'm Wayne Jacobson. I want to welcome you back to the God Journey. I'm all alone here today because there's some things I want to read and process with you, and there's just, I figured if I had anyone else here, it would take maybe 4 episodes to get through this just with both of our commentary. So rather than get lost in that, because this is not a subject matter that necessarily merits 4 different podcasts, I like getting back to the embracing his glory kind of stuff and more about what this journey's like. So we'll talk more about that at the end of the podcast, where we may be going from here. But I want to start off this way. I got this email a couple weeks ago from someone. I'm going to withhold their name just because, I'm going to be sensitive to the moment. He wrote this: I know I'm not the only one who feels like 2020 has brought me into the twilight zone. I haven't been listening to the podcast as I used to in previous years, but today I left the office to go take my lunch break and I felt a nudge to listen today. I opened my app, scrolled through the recent episodes, and A Safe Place for Pain to Fall, number 756, caught my eye. Listening as I drove down the road, I knew why the Father wanted me to listen to this episode. For this exact moment in my life, I had tears in my eyes as I listened to one of your guests talking about how all her family and friends only want to argue about COVID-19 and other current events and how hurtful it is. I'm the IT director of a major Christian media company, not going to tell you who, and I've learned how to bite my tongue over the years, but this year it's getting really hard. Yesterday I had our HR manager tell me that she's disappointed in me because she says I've become such a liberal this year, simply because I encouraged her to fact-check the latest Breitbart COVID-19 video going around on social media. Her words were very hurtful. This was after my former brother-in-law cursed me out on Facebook after my comments on posts dealing with the same topic. I guess I just need to keep my mouth shut and my thoughts and opinions to myself. No, no, and no. We can't give the forum to the arrogant bullies. We can't. And they're both there on the left and the right. This is not a choice between conservative or progressive. Both sides, the extremists on both sides, are ruining the country that we're going to have to build together somehow out of all that's happened to divide and separate us. And I'm going to read some about that stuff because that's what we're talking about. That's why we wrote Language of Healing. My passion for a country and a national life that is civil, that is gracious and kind, that looks to find the common ground in our differences. If I'm the only one left in America passionate about that, and I know I'm not, I'm going to still be taking it. But I was called a liberal a couple times this week myself and an ultra-conservative a couple of times. Because if I talk to someone on the left at all and they think I'm not standing exactly where they need to stand, then they accuse me of being a Trumpite or a, you know, whatever. They start bringing out the language. And then I had some of my friends, people I know on the right because I don't stand where they stand. I may stand an inch to the left of where they are, but then to them, I'm all the way over on the left. I'm just a liberal. And they throw language out like that to bully people, and I know where they're learning it. It's disgusting. Both sides, whether it's left or right, this is not a war between R&Ds. And I know we're in election year and all that stuff's just going to get even worse. I think my thoughts are summed up best in this non sequitur cartoon, a comic by Wiley Miller. It was earlier this week, a little note. This is the evolution of Bridging the Gap, it says. And it's got two cavemen standing on either side of a chasm. And there's a log running across the chasm. Both these guys are holding a club behind their backs. And one of them is saying to the other, "No, I think you should come over here." This is how we think of bridging the gap. This is how we think of the common ground. You got to be on my side or you're against me. You've got to exactly reflect everything I think or you're part of the other side. Now, I have been living on that log for the last 15 years. I'm not a Republican. I'm not a Democrat. When I say things about Trump, I know it ticks some of you off because you think I'm an anti-Trump, pro-Democrat guy. I think Donald Trump is as destructive to this nation as Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi. So I'm not sitting here saying, oh yeah, I think that side's right and this side's wrong. These are two political parties bent on destroying America because they are right. The other side's not just wrong, they're evil, and we've got to conquer them. And there's no lie we won't tell, no anger we won't vent, and it's ruining the fabric of this culture. It's why I wrote Language of Healing, why I did Bridge Builders years ago. And if I'm the only one left in America still screaming for a civil public square, for a civil way to negotiate our differences, I'll still stand there. I feel like a guy on that log. And yeah, I'm tired of standing on that log saying, why don't you drop your club? Why don't you come over here and find out that's another human being over there? And they may see the world differently than you do, but there's common ground available. If you alone are not the standard of intelligence, if someone disagrees with you, they're an idiot or they're a liberal or they're a reactionary conservative or they're whatever. And I've been passionate about this my whole life. And one of the things we point out in Language of Healing is how much this conflict is being exacerbated by the media. I read three things this week the last couple of weeks that I thought, man, this is rending the tent, letting us see inside. And if you don't have the courage to look in there and sort out what this is, it's amazing how much people from the inside can tell us exactly what's going on and no one cares. They just batten down the hatches, close up the tent, and we keep going. This is from producer Arania Pekkeri, former producer at MSNBC. She wrote this in a letter. July 24th was my last day at MSNBC. I don't know what I'm going to do next exactly, but I simply couldn't stay there anymore. My colleagues are very smart people with good intentions. The problem is the job itself. It forces skilled journalists to make bad decisions on a daily basis. You may not watch MSNBC, but just know that this problem still affects you too. All the commercial networks function the same, and no doubt that content seeps into our social media feed one way or another. All-out quest for ratings. It's taboo to discuss how the ratings scheme distorts content, or it's simply taken for granted because everyone in this commercial broadcast news industry is doing exactly the same thing. It's not just MSNBC. It's Fox. It's CNN. It's the New York Times. Behind closed, this is what she wrote. This is a producer inside MSNBC. Behind closed doors, industry leaders will admit the damage that's being done. We are a cancer and there is no cure, a successful and insightful TV veteran told me. This cancer stokes national division, even in the middle of a civil rights crisis. The model blocks diversity of thought and content because the networks have incentive. The networks have incentive to amplify fringe voices and events at the expense of others, all because it pumps up the ratings. Now, we said that in Language of Healing. I've said that blue in the face. It doesn't matter who you, if you're on TV you've got a responsibility to generate as many clicks, as much rating media as you. That's your whole deal. You're there not to tell the country the truth. And it amazes me that people listen to MSNBC say, we're getting the truth. Or read New York Times, we're getting the truth. Or Fox News, you're getting the truth. No, you're not. You're getting what those people, conservative or liberal, think. And they can prove it out by clicks, by likes, by ratings, what it is that their audience wants to hear, and they feed it to them. And even if what they're saying is factual, it's not in proportion in a way that lends itself for people in this republic to know the truth. So we've got people on one side, got a whole different set of facts from people on the other side, all of it twisted, not to destroy the country, all of it twisted to get ratings, to make money, to get clicks, to make people like me. It's all that. It's what the media serves. And as one very capable, this is going back to Arianna Pecori from MSNBC, formerly from MSNBC, a very capable senior producer once said, our viewers don't really consider us the news. They come to us for comfort. Oh my gosh. Truth supplanted by expediency, by our confirmation bias. I want to hear what I already believe. That makes me happy, and that makes me angry at anybody who doesn't also believe what I believe. And this process is killing the country we live in. I honestly don't believe most people want to live that way. I think what this is, it amplifies the voices of the fringe, because that gets everybody excited and clicking stuff and looking at stuff. It gets your enemies looking at your stuff. And I don't believe most people, and the conversations I've been in because of Language of Healing, the things we've hosted with people, the conversations, people are in tears with us saying, thank you for providing a different conversation. We need one. And those of you who think it's just MSNBC, this is from Fox News. Fox News is a former host from them. Ebony Williams, co-hosted Fox News specialist, says Roger Ailes, she's left the Fox network, but she says Roger Ailes founded a network on the fear of the devaluation of whiteness. Now, I know if you're a Fox News, and I watch Fox News, I don't watch these things, but I don't watch them in a vacuum either. And she says that there's a devaluation of whiteness. A former Fox News host said the network was founded for the sole purpose of demonizing the other. Now, the only reason I say that, read that, is because that's what I see when I watch Fox News. It's what I see when I watch MSNBC or CNN. That's why many of you find comfort, many of my conservative Christian friends, you find comfort in a media or a president that bullies back as much as you have felt bullied by the mainstream media or the liberal media. And so but you don't realize somebody created a network for the purpose of demonizing the other. Fox has a reputation for being bigoted and racist, all for a very good reason, she said. This is back to Ebony Williams. Roger Ailes very plainly, in plain sight, says that he is forming a network to speak one thing and one thing only, the demonizing of the other. Nobody has ever done this before. There was no conservative news network speaking to the fear of intrinsic devaluation of whiteness in this country. And Roger saw void, and like any smart business person, what? Find a need and fill it. And part of the backlash we see now comes from the other side, the left, pushing back against that, white supremacy, white fragility, the language that's saying, okay, we're not an environment in which fairness persists. But if you only get your information from Fox, you think that's what's fair, and it's far from fair. It's one side of it. It's one side of these two guys on a log with a club saying, why don't you come over here, we'll have common ground. No, common ground is when you lay down your weapons and you find a place that says, the common good of this country is more important than my preferences holding sway. And then Barry Weiss resigned from the New York Times not long ago, a similar kind of thing. It's a couple months ago. They ran an op-ed from a sitting United States senator that was recommending a certain kind of behavior. The newsroom went crazy. They got it. They apologized for running an op-ed by a sitting senator. That's ridiculous. Maybe conservative. You may not like his point of view. You may love his point of view. But if you're going to be the paper of record for the U.S., that's what you're supposed to be, then why aren't you being that? And I do read the New York Times, but I read it with a jaundiced eye. I do know there's a lot of not necessarily falsehoods, but falsely presented because of the proportion and weight that they give things. The proportion and weight on one side of it is very different from the reality that other people experience. So Barry Weiss wrote this in his resignation, about his resignation. I was hired with the goal of bringing in voices that would not otherwise appear in your pages, first-time writers, centrists, conservatives, and others who would not naturally think of the Times as their home. The reason for the effort was clear. The paper's failure to anticipate the outcome of the 2016 election meant that it didn't have a firm grasp of the country it covers. But the lessons that ought to have followed the election, lessons about the importance of understanding other Americans, the necessity of resisting tribalism, and the centrality of the free exchange of ideas of a democratic society, have not been learned. Instead, a new consensus has emerged in the press, but perhaps especially in this paper. The truth isn't a process of collective discovery, but an orthodoxy already known to an enlightened few whose job is to inform everyone else. Now you can put the conservatives or liberals, Christian nationalists in that statement. We know what's best for this country, and we're going to make it happen even if you don't like it. And what it's going to lead to is what it's leading to now, increasing tension, increasing war, increasing anger and interpersonal relationships, name-calling. And I understand the emailer wrote me to say, man, maybe I better just shut up. Well, I'm not going to shut up. And if you don't like it, this is a free podcast. You don't pay for it. You don't have to listen to it. I'm not going for ratings. If there's 12 of us that listen to the God Journey and enjoy it, I'm in. And you don't have to agree with me. I'm not saying I'm right about everything, but I'm right about this, that our country will not survive the increasing polarization that both sides are stoking right now. And now it's gone beyond the media. It's down to just people in social feeds and whatever else that can't have a sincere, honest conversation and discover something because they're already right. And unless what's being said confirms what they already believe, they're not willing to have the conversation. One of the great joys of what I've been involved in the last year and a half, 2 years of writing Language of Healing and then being in the conversations, we're being asked by a college in the middle part of the country to come and help them have a discussion about race that is divisive in their community. And they want to try to find a way to have the conversations that are important to have without polarizing, falling apart, attacking each other. And so Bob and Arneet and I are going to get to explore that, I think. We're still working on how that's going to work and where it's going to work. And I'm excited because there are people who want to have a different conversation. I've said it in Language of Healing. I'll say it here. I think 72% of our country wants to have a decent conversation if given the opportunity. It's the 28% on the fringes of either side that have money and have microphones. And somehow when somebody says something provocative, everybody clicks on it. People want to watch it in the ratings. Fear is a big seller. Bullying is a big seller. And it's ruining the country that I love and that I hope we find a way around. Doesn't mean that there isn't truth. There isn't things that are right and there aren't things that are wrong. But how we negotiate that in a secular society is critical if we're going to be in a place to bring the life and love of Jesus into a broken world. If we become a political identity with a religious agenda, yeah, it's going to really hurt, and already has, our ability to engage those who don't know the God we know. So I'm still hoping we can find a way to do that. Back to Barry Weiss's resignation, he said, the paper of record, referring to New York Times, is more and more the record of those living in a distant galaxy, one whose concerns are profoundly removed from the lives of most people. And if you read it, you'll know that that's exactly true. Even now, I'm confident that most people at the Times do not hold these views, yet they are cowed by those who do. Why? Because they believe the ultimate goal is righteous. Perhaps because they believe that they will be granted protection if they nod along as the coin of the realm, language, is degraded in service to an ever-shifting, longer list of quote-unquote right causes. And so, yeah, I that's why I'm in the conversation I'm in. Well, I hope we can find a better way to talk about these things. And now I want to respond. I got a guest on the show today, but they're not here. Not a person. It's a woman named Catherine who wrote me from Australia. And she had some things she wanted to ask, given some of the podcasts I've done with Arneeta and some of the ones we've done on these themes of having a different view of race, having the conversation, the book White Fragility, which I know a lot of people don't love. And I don't love it either. I'm not sitting here saying, gosh, I think she's got it all right. I've got some problems with the book. At the same time, in all honesty, it opened my eyes to some things. It helped me see life through other people's eyes. And I think that's a valuable thing. It's not enough for us to just stay protected in what we think we see all by ourselves and that we have all the truth we need when in fact we don't. Because it hasn't led us to the kind of love and grace and kindness that open a door to a generous way of living in the world with people who are different than we are. And I think this is absolutely important. This is not, for those of you saying, oh, you're just supporting the Democratic agenda. No, I'm not. I'm no more excited to vote Democrat than I am Republican in this election. I may vote for my dog, which I did a few years back just because I wrote in my dog's name just because I didn't feel like anybody who was running deserved my vote. And right now, I'm not sure where this is going to go. And I know people are going to say, yeah, but you can't not do that. That's how we've been lied to for the last 40 years. If you don't vote for this, then you're voting for that. And it's why we keep having more and more fringy kinds of candidates instead of people who really care about this country, who care about bringing us together instead of dividing us. And I'm hopeful we can have something different. But Catherine wrote as in response to some of the conversations we were having here on these themes. And I think some of the things she asks are things that others of you will care about. So that's why I'm reading her letter and kind of seeing where this goes. She said, I'm writing from Australia, but I've been interested to listen to your recent podcast on the topic of race relations because we have a similar situation in our own country as you do in the U.S., though there are some key differences. And I really want to grow into a greater understanding of how Jesus sees things and how he's asking us to respond to others. I'd like to ask if you have read any of Thomas Sowell, and if so, what do you think of his thoughts on this and other subjects? Thomas Sowell is a conservative black man who gets paid by a black foundation and works for a conservative foundation and conservative media. And what I know about these guys is that they're the ones that white media can find and put on Fox News, whatever, and kind of parrot back to us what we whites want to believe. And I know in the black community, they're just like, oh my gosh, we don't need people doing that for us, because it undermines some of the things they're passionate about. I mean, I've had people send me links to Thomas Sowell's things, and I listen to what he says, and it's like anything else I hear in the media, about 30% of what he says is true. And about 70%, in the context in which that 30% swims, creates a distortion that is just a part of the truth. It's not the whole truth. Do I wish in our society that everybody took on a greater responsibility in their neighborhoods for accountability, for law and order? I do. I do. I do hope people, parents, raise their kids to try harder, to do better. I think that's an important message that needs to get out there. At the same time, I know that not every neighborhood has the same advantages that other neighborhoods have, or the same kids have the same tools that other kids have, or the same priorities, given the background of our own culture, which some of the anti-racism language is getting us to take a look at. Is the society we built, this preferring European subcontext with a Christian morality background, and it's not always a Christian morality. We say Judeo-Christian ethic, and there are things about sexuality and other things that we talk about in that are valuable. But there was also an oppression in that for people who don't agree with it or don't see it the way we do. And so when you find somebody, like if you find an African-American to say things as a white person that you like to hear that, hey, we're not a racist society, everything is fine, systemic racism doesn't exist, they just need to try harder to participate in our society better. You find that, you love it, but you have yet to listen to the heart of African-Americans who are saying, that's not the answer. There's a piece of the puzzle in there, but it's not the whole answer. She goes on, I can readily accept that even if a law states that all people are equal, it does not necessarily mean that they are treated equally in practice. We had a long discussion about that in the Language of Healing Live last week. The difference between equality, which you can have in the law, and equity, which is, do you really have the benefit of what the law is saying? That's two different things, right? I think we do have a society that champions equality, but effectively hasn't offered it yet, hasn't offered the equity that allows people to aspire, to dream, to grow, to develop, to have an equal opportunity under the law, or even equal justice under the law. That if I walk on the scene as a white person in a, say, an encounter with law enforcement, I'm going to get a different set of assumptions than are going to be made if I was a person of color or if I was black. Now, that's a challenge. And some people who look like me are going to say, well, they've earned that. They've deserved that because then those neighborhoods are sketchy and there's been a lot of crime that's come from that. There's proportionately that we could argue statistics till we're blue in the face here. The fact is I wrestle with why does when I'm in a situation that police show up and it's maybe a bit of a threatening situation, when a police officer shows up, I'm comforted. I feel like, wow, good. I'm glad someone's here to help us navigate this. And why is it that other groups of people come to that and a police officer coming into that situation is more threatening to them, increases the threat level of the situation because a different set of assumptions are going to be made about them, whether they're warranted or not. And that's what we're struggling with. We're struggling with trying to get between the difference between equality and equity. And no, I'm not I don't support all the agenda of Black Lives Matter. I don't. But I do agree that there are racial problems in our culture. And there's an inequity about how we apply culture that inures to the greater difficulty of what's now being called BICOL. BICOL. I think that's the way it is. And there's a new term being used. There's a new term being used called BIPOC, which is Black, Indigenous, People of Color. I just learned that last week to try and help us process some of these things. Now, Black, Indigenous, they've taken those out of the people of color because many African Americans find people of color not to be their identity, and it may have a lot to do with colored as a pejorative that has been used about them in times past. It may be that they see their experience differently than in the POC, people of color, wouldn't be Indians, Asians. It would be all the other kinds of minority groups. Now, in time, that's probably going to shift because I don't think people of color, a lot of Asians put themselves there. So that's probably a term that's going to be eventually like LGBTQ, whatever, because everybody wants their own label in the acronym. So it may change, but that's a new one that's emerging right now. She said, there are still overtly racist individuals in every society. I can also accept that the majority group, whites in Australia and the USA, may have an unconscious racial bias and or may unintentionally do say racist things at times. However, I struggle with the thesis, white fragility, that all white people are inherently and inescapably tainted by racism, simply by virtue of the fact that they are white and therefore in the dominant majority. If people admit to racial bias, they are obviously admitting to being racist, and they deny it. And if they deny it, that is proof that they're experiencing white fragility, and therefore they must also be racist. This approach takes all evidence as proof of its hypothesis, which seems to me an insincere way to conduct research. Can Robin DiAngelo in White Fragility conceive of any situation in which a white person is actually not racist? No, and the book's kind of predicated on that. She says that kind of out front. But her definition of racist is different than most of ours. Most of ours are going to see a racist as someone who's advocating for white supremacy, who looks down on black people, who looks for ways to discriminate against them, who wouldn't let their daughter date one, wouldn't. That's where you're going to see that kind of racist activity. But she defines the term as anybody that participates in a society that has benefits for certain colors of people that it doesn't extend to others. And that's what she points out. So if you're part of that culture and you've benefited from it, but you haven't shared it with other people. There's a guy that I read, a football guy, a football blogger, and he writes about my team. So I read it from time to time. Someone asked him what he saw as white privilege. And what he said was, when my dad got home from World War II, he was able to be the first person in his family ever to go to college because of the GI Bill. And because he went to college, his kids went to college, and his grandkids went to college. And he said the GI Bill changed the entire trajectory of his family because it gave his father a free education. But when 1.2 million blacks came back from fighting in World War II, the GI Bill was not extended to them for various reasons. And you can go into the history of that on Wikipedia if you want to. But very, very few blacks were given the inability to benefit from the GI Bill. So he says, as a white person, I see the trajectory of my family was changed by a law that was not equally available to others, so that I'm a beneficiary of that. Now, I don't see that as reason, as some people say, oh, then we should be ashamed and we should be guilty and we should be. No, it's not. I don't think people looking for your guilt. I mean, maybe some are. But I think the vast majority are saying, no, we're just looking for you to own a problem that we're still trying to resolve. How do we fix that? It's those historic inequities that are the worst to try and wrap your heads around. I mean, you got battles in the Middle East going on because of inequities thousands of years ago that keep perpetuating because it's tit for tat. One side grabs this, one side grabs that. No, I agree with her. White fragility sets up the kind of process where everybody's a racist. And if you don't admit it, then you really prove that you are. And that's kind of crazy because I still think racism is an overt act to discriminate. But I do agree with this. I think most white people have biases against people of other cultures. They do feel like the way we want society to run is the right way. And if you came from a different culture or heritage, then that's the wrong way. And then we continue to step on their ability to have an equal hold on society and an equal station in it. And it's hard for us to see that because when you're the beneficiary of something, you don't see it as well. Just take something as simple as when you feel like you've been cheated, you're very angry. You're wanting something to be fixed. You're wanting it right now. But when you get an advantage on someone else, just take buying a car. So everybody goes out and makes the best deal they can. And everybody likes to say, man, I got the best deal that could ever be given on this car, which means you cheated the dealership a little bit. But the dealership's saying the same thing. Oh, man, we took that guy to the cleaners. He thought he got a great deal, but we got our money. We're all good. And so you only feel the passion of injustice when you're the victim of it, not when you're the beneficiary of it. That's why it's hard. I think that's the point of white fragility that I really loved. It's hard for people who benefit from something to see that something. And looking at life through someone else's eyes is just the greatest gift ever to trigger love in you, compassion in you, and care in you. And that's what I've enjoyed about this journey. I'm not a full-on leftist with racial ideals. I'm not. But I do hold to the desire that, yes, our country has been problematic for people of color, for BICOL, B-I-C-O-L. It's been different people of color. POC. I'm going to get that wrong a million times. B-I-P-O-C. BIPOC. There's the word, BIPOC. It's been difficult for people to engage that process. How do we do that? Is injustice more predominant? Does that mean most cops are racist, bad people? No, I don't believe they are. I think the vast majority of law enforcement people, like I say, when a law enforcement person arrives on the scene, I'm happy about it. When I pass a law enforcement officer on a walk or engage one in the community somewhere in a restaurant, which has been a while since we're not eating in restaurants, I don't mind saying, hey, appreciate your service. Glad you're here for us. I think most police officers are honorable people doing a difficult job in a broken society. But I also think policemen, I had this conversation with a surgeon last week. Doctors police themselves. If you're a bad doctor, they want you out of doctoring. They don't want you hurting other patients because of your lack of knowledge or your arrogance or because you're doing something that's just hurtful to people and not helpful. So doctors police themselves. Police have set up a blue wall in the past where because they're the law and order people in a difficult culture. And I think a hundred years ago, that thin blue line, we've got to back each other no matter what. I think that needs to pass. I think that we need to call out those, and what better to do it than policemen who know, yeah, that guy's a little unhinged when it comes to people of color or black or indigenous people, or that person is a bit hostile and angry, and so he's hurtful in the culture. We've got to be able to talk about that, because if we don't, then we're going to perpetuate this response to people who get worse treatment in the culture because worse assumptions are made about them that we think are historically justified but may not be. And then Catherine continues, I also warned about the topic of individual responsibility. You and Arnita touched on it briefly in your podcast, but did not discuss it in detail. It seems to me that this is another situation which polarizes people. They either decide that inequities are solely due to racial discrimination or solely due to individual responsibility. But isn't it likely in most circumstances to be a combination of both? And to that, I would say, absolutely. When you hear a one-sided solution to a problem, you can bet somebody's ignoring something else. That's that whole binary thinking that we cover in Language of Healing, because I think it's important that we not think of things just, well, it's either it's racial discrimination or it's a lack of individual responsibility. And that pretty much is where the political entities line up. Instead of saying, as most things are, you know what, this is where the common ground is. Yeah, there is racial discrimination in our culture, and doggone, we've got to ferret it out, and we've got to be better people so that we don't have that kind of hill that people have to climb because they're being discriminated against. And in some ways, I grew up in California, so I didn't see a lot of that overtly. When I talk to people who grew up in the South, as African-Americans in the South, it was overt, even in my generation. Segregation, we're not that far from it. People fighting because we're trying to integrate schools. We want separate but equal to work, but it couldn't work. And, oh, man, that's just in my generation. And some of that, people who've lost those battles politically still hold the animosity in their heart and look for other ways to undermine equality racially in America. And that's why this battle has been so difficult. And when you just want to say, hey, the culture's fine, everything's great, we don't have to worry about this, that's just too, you're missing the point that those people have created barriers in our society that we're still trying to unravel. And if you don't know that, then I would say you probably don't have an African-American, Asian-American, Hispanic, I mean, you don't have somebody that's in your friendship enough to talk about it so that you could see the world through their eyes. And if you don't, that's what we encourage in Language. Find somebody, befriend them, have a friendship close enough to say, what was it like growing up for you in my culture? And look at it through their eyes. It will change, because from our eyes, as the beneficiaries of a white tweaked culture, we don't see it. And we want to believe it's not there, because we want to believe that we earned what we got all on our own. And if they would just work harder, they could get what we have. And they're saying, no, we can't. There are barriers that you don't face. There are prejudices that you don't consider. And this needs, what I think the Language of Healing does in talking through this, and I don't, if Catherine agrees with me or not at the end of this, that's not important to me. It's important that she's thinking about it and talking about it, because in time, her experiences will see other things than she sees now. And if we can move this way, don't get caught up in all that the protesters or Black Lives Matter or ultra-progressive politicals want you to believe and say, that's the other side of where you view it. If you think that's true, then you're an extremist on your side. So come to the middle. Learn how to be more compassionate. Jump out on the log with me. Learn how to be more compassionate with people who grew up in a different world than you do. Learn to see it through their eyes. It will change you. It'll make you, as we started this whole thing with the first email, it can make you a soft place for pain to fall. You can be a person who can be in these conversations with someone who has suffered prejudice and discrimination. You can wrestle with, well, what do we do to make that better? What do we do to really find an equitable society? Not just changing law, but changing enough attitudes and hearts that people get the benefit of that law. Finally, this is the last thing, and we're almost done here. Finally, I've heard you say a couple of times on different episodes with regard to George Floyd's death, how can it not be about race? Do you also think the police system in the U.S. as a whole is intensely racist? I do not, in the sense that she's asking that question, I believe. I do not think most cops are overt racists. As I said, overwhelmingly, by 75-80%, I think cops really are trying to do the right thing, really sacrifice for it. And it's a tough job in a world that's where people despise them. It's that 20 to 25% that is the problem. And you can't just ignore it. You're going to have to deal with it. And then she goes on to talk about statistics seem to lean one way, that really whites die at the hands of police more than the other. What's true is that there are more innocent, innocent's a tough word because you can always find somebody, something they did wrong. But people who didn't deserve to die at the hands of police, though mostly black. Yeah, there are whites who resist, who shoot back at police and get killed. They do. And there are some African-American men, quite frankly, who resisted police and did things enough that trying to get the situation under control meant they had to use lethal force or try to protect themselves. I don't think it's always bad when something like that. It's always tragic when someone gets killed. But when someone gets killed, George Floyd was a different thing. There's a guy holding a foot on his neck. He's screaming. He can't breathe. Just like the murder in New York City a couple of years ago. These are incidences that we don't have the idea that this happens to a lot of white people. So I think there is a problem. I agree. I don't think you can see the litany of people who've been killed, whether it's Breonna Taylor, whether it's George Floyd, whether it's Ahmaud Arbery. These are people that didn't, and that Ahmaud Arbery wasn't the police. It was just people who thought they could act like the police and go arrest someone under citizen's arrest. Those are tragedies. And if you don't see them as tragedies, then we have to think about it a little deeper. Hear the heart of people who are saying, we've got to do better than that. And so I hope that helps. Catherine, others who may have those similar questions, I don't define this process in the extremes. And I know it's what we want to do. Language of Healing isn't written to support one extreme over the other. It's written, quite honestly, to marginalize the extremists and invite reasonable people into a better dialogue. That's what I want to do. That's, I hope, when we cover it on this podcast periodically, that's what we're doing. We're inviting people of goodwill into a better conversation than the media or the extremists on either side allow us. And if you only see extremists on one side, you need to check yourself, because that probably means you're the extremist on the other side. You need to see the holes in both. You need to see the problems in both. New York Times won't give it to you. We just read that. MSNBC won't give it to you. CNBC won't give it to you. Fox News won't give it to you. You need to look at the holes in both of those arguments. And you need to find your way to a better place. At least I think you do. I am, and I'm loving it. I'm loving seeing through someone else's eyes. I'm loving being involved in conversations that matter with people who care. And that's the passion of my heart. Now, one other thing before we go. Nope, that's the passion of my heart. And that's the passion of my heart. And in talking about it, to me, it's the same as what else I do. 3, 2, and that's why I'm in this conversation. I'm passionate about it. Not more passionate than helping people grow in Jesus, sort out the difference between religion and relationship, find their way to authenticity in Christ. The podcast will always mostly be about that. But this is a part, I think, that's not divorced from that. How we treat others in the community, how our faith plays out with people who don't share our faith, and how our compassion is triggered for those who've been unjustly treated, like the Good Samaritan to the Jewish man who was robbed on the road. When injustice happens, does it spark our compassion? Or do we want to walk by on the other side of the road and pretend it doesn't exist? Because I don't want to be uncomfortable. Discussions about race, discussions about religion, discussions about sexuality, discussions about politics, in their best case, are uncomfortable. If they're not, then you're just in an echo chamber of your own preference. And that's not going to be good enough in days to come.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.